Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy. Hey folks, this is episode number 193, and this week we have our friend Mark Anthony Kay. He is one of the co-hosts of the KISS FAQ podcast, and he's got a music project. But of course, before we let him get into his stuff, we're going to do our stuff. And we're going to start by talking about Motley Crue basically blowing up their cessation of touring agreement.
Jeez.
So I'll say my piece first. I knew when they signed the agreement, this was coming. It was just a matter of how long are they going to stay off the road? How long until
4 years.
Until Vince eats through all of his money?
Because he figured out that groceries are expensive and he didn't bank enough money back for that. So
buffets are usually like not too bad, right? Like $4.95 and all you can eat. I mean, I don't know, $10. I don't know what is it.
Is Tommy going to go to rehab and is Vince going to lose 40 pounds
now? My understanding. And I haven't read anything official, but my understanding is that the deal with Live Nation was that they wanted Vince Neil to lose weight. And Vince was the one that brought up, if y'all make me lose weight, you better make Tommy go to rehab. You know, I don't think it was Live Nation that said anything about rehab. But then again, I don't know if Live Nation said anything about Vince losing weight. That could just be shit stirring trolls on the internet.
Well,
I know there are not very many trolls on the internet.
You know, yeah. Vincent needs to be able to get through one sentence without having to take a breath. You know what I'm saying?
I'll tell you one thing, though. I think I saw one of the rare performances where he actually sang pretty decently. But you know why that was? Do you remember back in the tour when he broke his foot? This is back when they were touring with KISS, remember? And he had broken his foot. And on the Toronto show, they were borderline thinking about canceling, but he went ahead and did it. But he was like stationary. He couldn't really move anywhere. So because he was in one spot half the night, he sang actually pretty good because he wasn't winded from going all over the stage, right? So maybe if they break his foot before the tour starts, we'll get some good singing out of him.
Can I do it? Be fucking hilarious.
Mark, as far as I'm concerned, you just won the internet.
Yeah. Break a leg, really.
Dave Grohl's like, I got a chair for you, Vince. Yeah, exactly. You can sit in this chair the whole time. It moves. The chair moves, so you don't have to get out and do anything.
Exactly. Geez.
Kickstart my electric car.
And then what really sucks about this whole situation is...
You're going to have to start over, Dennis.
No, and the whole thing that really sucks about this is I was really looking forward to seeing Poison go back out on tour. I haven't seen them in years, and it would have been good to see them. Okay, Def Leppard, if they went out with them, okay, I can handle that. I saw them a couple years ago. It's the same show they've been doing for about, 4 or 5 years? Oh, you know, same as KISS. But anyway, you know, the thing is, you know, they do have a drummer with a missing limb, so they do have to have, you know, some sort of, they can't really improvise through their night. Anyway.
What do you mean they can't improvise through the night?
Can't just throw a song.
How many records has he done with one arm? A lot.
I know, but the first two.
It
has to be sequenced also where they can actually have some little bit extra pumped in. So
you're saying he cheats?
He doesn't. I mean, he plays drums. He does a very good job, but it's just they have a little bit of
Are you ragging on a one-armed guy?
No, I'm not. Anyway, I would actually sit through Def Leppard again because I like their songs. But the whole thing was, man, I just can't sit through Motley Crue again. It's like, God, you know.
Sleeve.
I know. But I would have to like. So
they're
maybe
doing stadium shows, though. I mean, it's a state. The tickets are going to be ridiculous. And they're going to be
easy money. Yeah. It's going to be.
It's going to be a money grab. Every concert is a money grab. Every one of them. No matter where you go to a venue at, it's all a money grab. They're looking for your money.
What is the rumor? $150 million just to get them to get going on this. So they're already in the hole. You know, they're going to be trying to.
Well, how's Mick doing? Because hasn't Mick always been a factor in this as far as health goes? Like,
I think they're just going to wheel him out on a dolly. And
yeah.
His playability, I mean, he's been recording, so I think his playability is okay. But like you said, Mark, I don't think he's not going to be Vince. He's not going to be running around.
He doesn't run around anyway.
No, he doesn't. He's never really run around. So he's going to basically, they're going to park him on one spot on the stage, and that's where he's going to be. And his, you know, runners will run guitars to him and all that bullshit from there. And I mean, I think it's pretty lightweight. You know, but he's playing. Like I said, he's re-recording now, so I think he can do it.
And he plays good. I mean, every time I've seen Motley Crue, he's been the one shining light in the whole thing. I mean, he's a really good guitar player. I mean, I've always found, I don't know about you guys. I mean, I don't know how many times you guys have seen Crue in concert, but of the times that I've seen them, their sound mix is always really odd. I find it's all Mick, like blasting loud Mick, a kick drum and snare from Tommy, and that's about it. You can't hear Nikki at all, hardly ever, you know. And you know, Vince is just popping through that guitar a little bit, so you can just kind of hear him in there. I've always found their mix odd. Do you guys find that, or?
Well, it's probably because they have to have it that way.
Well, I think you can only hear Vince go, oh, yeah, everything else is a blur anyway, so it doesn't matter. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think they do have kind of a strange.
We saw them. I saw them in Theater of Pain, which I think you all saw that, didn't you, Bill?
Yep.
And Alan also. Yep. And then the last time I seen him was the Farewell Tour, which was just absolutely, Bill and I, it was horrible.
Oh, my God.
Thank God I only paid $15 for that lawn ticket because it would have been a waste. But Alice, you know, opened and it was just a phenomenal show.
That was worth every penny.
Like, it should have been the Brothers Away, you know, just had like Motley out there for 45 minutes and then had Alice out there the rest of the time. Yeah. It was a good show.
So that's the only thing that saved that show. I saw them open in Evansville for somebody. Maybe a Kiss. Might have been.
May have. Yeah, maybe.
Yep. I saw that would have been Shout at the Devil, or would that have been Too Fast for Love? Might have been Too Fast for Love. And then I saw the Theater of Pain tour, and I saw the Dr. Feelgood tour in Indy, and then saw the one that we went to. I don't think I saw another one after that. I might have, but I don't really know. Can't remember. I don't know. I saw them, and last time I saw them, I was like, this is way too much.
I saw them when they came to Evansville to the Victory Theater back in 98, right after Tommy got out of jail and had to do his court-ordered speech on the stage, it was terrible. Hearing Tommy Lee preach about domestic violence, that was terrible.
That was the one at Kevin Book when we had him on. Remember?
Yeah, his band BSR opened up for that show.
Opened for that show. Yeah. It was bad.
Then I saw them the second time I saw them. I only saw them because a friend of mine had bought his son a ticket for Christmas. And he got sick, so his wife called me and begged me to take their son to the show because she didn't want to have to sit through that god-awful band. So I went and sat through that god-awful band.
I like their music.
But the thing is, I'm a huge Motley Crue fan. You know,
I like their music.
They're like my number three favorite band. Right. You know, it's just live. They're not cutting it. But I will say this, you know, because somebody asked me if I was going to go, and I said the only way I would go is if I got a free ticket. However, if I found out that they pre-recorded Vince's vocals, a la Kiss, I'm going.
Well, I posted that somewhere earlier. I said, at least Paul does his own backing vocals.
I saw that. That was funny.
Speaking of Paul, they had a Kiss Jump the Shark this week.
Jesus God.
And it was a Paul's Jump the Shark. I saw actually a video of the boat. Because I seen this video, I'm like, where's this from? And it was actually from Kiss Online. It was Eric walking out to this little, like, almost like a fishing boat. And then Gene come walking out in makeup, but wearing a robe, kind of like the movie kind of situation. With the robe going on. He fist pumped this little kid. Then they go out, and I guess they go to this bay, and then they're doing. So were the people in a submarine, I guess, while they were playing?
They were on the back of the boat. So if you watch the video, there are two ropes. okay. coming off the back of the boat. And there's another picture of they're in a boat behind that boat.
So they weren't even on the same boat.
No.
Like
they were in a nice. Boat behind a boat.
And like a glass bottom that, boat. That's right. It was a glass bottom boat.
Correct. And the idea was the sharks would come up to the surface either between the boats or with underneath the glass bottom boat. But I have not seen anything that says anybody actually saw a guppy.
They said that the sharks were actually on another bay or another point or whatever.
The sharks got the hell out of there. They went to see Paul.
So you know what they're going to say is they say that Paul's voice is the one that draws them in. You know, if you do all Gene songs,
they should have just pumped it in there because everybody's loose to it by now.
I mean, I'm like, if this is the jump the shark moment, this is the bad. This is bad.
You got to watch the video because I you know, my God.
I've yet to see it.
I watched the video. You haven't seen it yet?
The video that I saw was just calling Dr. Love, and they didn't
even... Yeah, that's what I saw.
Yeah, as far as I know, that's the only video that has surfaced.
Yeah, that's all I saw, but watching that video, I was like, this is just sad. I mean,
it
just
did five songs. They only did five.
I know they only did five. It wasn't that, and it wasn't that Paul wasn't there. It was just the whole premise of it.
Yeah.
At least for me personally, you know, being a fan sitting in a room surrounded by Kiss shit all over the place. I'm like,
the only thing they needed was Henry Winkler to come through and jump over the boat.
That would have been genius.
That would have been the greatest shit ever.
That would have been genius. Now, did they do that? Was it a publicity stunt or was it a fundraiser?
10 people paid.
Yeah, but they got paid by Airbnb. It was a promo for Airbnb and somebody else in Australia, but only 8 people paid.
Really?
There were only 8 people that paid. In an article I read, it told 2 of them are from Texas, and then like 4 of them were from.
Was it like $1,000 tickets or something?
I don't know.
Well, Gene, you know, the Australian tour got canceled, of course, because Paul's deal. But Gene did show up and did his vault. And I guess I did read something about that where the guy was really happy. And I guess Gene spent a lot of good time with those guys.
I got to ask you guys, though, because you guys just said, okay, they canceled the tour because of Paul. So your guys are buying that? Because I've read so many different comments on there where people saying, one guy actually did this huge breakdown saying that that's not why they canceled it. Their tickets sold crap. Some guy went online and said that he checked out the ticket things because you can check and see what seats are available for shows and that there were tons of tickets left for lots of shows. Some of them were not even half sold.
I had
so
read
that.
So
he thinks that they just canceled it because it wasn't selling.
I had read that as well. And that's a good possibility. But we all know that Paul has had vocal problems in the past.
Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, that's an easy way to get out of it.
So my whole thing about Paul's vocals, and this is not slamming Paul, and we said we've all been to the concerts, we know how it is. So whenever he's doing his rap and he can't talk whatsoever, then when he starts singing, that's when he's going to get shown. Because you know how his raps are the last time we saw him. You know, he's hoarse and he's sounding really shitty. Then all of a sudden he starts singing and he's like, yeah. You know, he's back to back to 70s Paul again. It's like, wait. I just heard you say people, and you're like, you sound like you're like 95.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can see where if he cannot do the rap, then they're going to find out that they're doing tapes. Now, I can see that.
There's no question.
I know, but I haven't, Mark. I'm like you. I hadn't heard anything from Australia. But if that's the case, I can see where they're going to basically tank that, because why go over there and pull? I mean, that's an expensive tour that they're doing. And all that equipment, they're going to have to send it over to Australia to play, five or seven shows? What was it? I don't remember what.
I don't know.
But anyway, they're just not going to waste their time with that. And they're going to use Paul as a scapegoat. I could see that, you know.
I don't know. I think he's sick.
And maybe.
That's possible, yeah.
Yeah. They usually sell pretty well in Australia. It's surprising that they didn't sell well.
Shandy.
I like that song.
I do too. I like that.
Of course, we get stuck with something else. Anything else other than that, they never play that.
Yeah, that damn song, Do You Love Me?
Oh.
No, they haven't played that either. No, we played that once. I heard it once at three shows.
I did hear those two things, but also I want to mention, too, I just heard today TMZ is reporting that Eddie Van Halen just got out of the hospital on Sunday due to some treatment he was having for his cancer. He was having abdominal issues and some bleeding. So, you know, I know that they keep promoting, and I know that his family keeps promoting these pictures, and he's out and about and out and about and out and about. But, you know, he is going to Germany supposedly for his throat cancer, and hopefully, you know, it hasn't spread and what have you, but, you know, it is what it is. So we all, yeah. You know, Eddie was a big thing in my life. So, you know, I hope the best for him. So
yeah.
Just want to put a shout out. So, all right, Bill. All right, Alan, you got Alan, you're running this. You want to run it?
Like, kind of sounds like you took over.
Anybody else got any more news?
Hey, Bill, you got any more news?
Mark, you hear anything?
Alice Cooper in 7 days.
Yeah, 9 days for me.
9 days for me.
7 days. And if you haven't checked out our Facebook page, I posted a picture that I found Saturday. I think it was Saturday. That was a picture I took in 1979 of the Inside Out tour, which was, I believe, I'm almost positive, it was my second concert ever. It was February of 1979, and I remember a lot about that show. It was crazy. It was cool as hell.
It is cool.
I remember that when it started, they brought. I'm not gonna go. They had like gurneys and wheelchairs and shit like that hanging from the ceiling, which is really cool. He was in an insane asylum, and they had a video screen playing, and they had a video of him running and being chased by people in straitjackets and stuff like that. And he had a straitjacket on, and he jumped through the screen.
And like, oh, yeah.
That's how it started. Yeah, I was cool. Like, damn,
And what year was that? That was
79.
79.
Wow, that's.
I mean, it was really badly lit. Like, you could see it was. You could see the video screen, and you could kind of see what was going on. But it wasn't. I mean, obviously, the technology not even close to what it was
still
today.
For 79.
It was lit from the back, and it was lit from the back. And you see him running, and he's running in it, and all of a sudden he runs out the front of it, and it's just like that was.
Yeah, really, but still, I mean, I'm sure people really found that entertaining. I mean, that's one guy who even now puts on an incredible show. I mean, I don't think I've ever been disappointed at an Alice Cooper show. I saw him when he was like middle act for Heaven and Hell when Ronnie was still alive with them. And it was incredible. He just fantastic show. And I mean, Paul should have took a lesson from him. There's a guy who doesn't do any in-between banter, chatter, keeps it all to the songs and, you know, just singing. But look at how well his voice has lasted. You know, I mean, he keeps his voice to just the singing. And yep. I think there's a lesson to be learned in that.
Well, that, yeah, and he's not doing an acoustic show before the show. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And he's not doing a soul band.
He's playing golf. Yeah, he's just out playing golf. And he may yell at the, like, fuck.
You know? No. Four.
Oh, before we start, I got to ask you guys one thing. I mean, sure. Obviously, you guys must have seen that whole thing about Vinnie Vincent and his $250 CD. I mean, I'm going to assume that nobody here really? Is purchasing that.
Really? Can I buy one? Can I really buy? Where's my billfold? Where's it?
No. Oh, hey, Mark, can you clarify what?
You can. I'll buy the CD case now, and you can just give me the CD later.
Mark, can you clarify what you mean by here? Do you mean like on this planet, or do you mean like on this podcast?
Well, I'm gonna say, just make it safe and say this podcast, because I'm very sure that there'll be at least a few people who will buy it,
and they deserve every penny that he takes from them.
Not anybody on this podcast will be buying that at
good
all.
Good God. I tell you, he needs a tour. They need to get Bob and Vinny need to tour.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
they're wow. Both
disgruntled brothers. Crazy. Is what they should call them.
They call them
unbelievable.
It should be called BC, batshit crazy.
No, I mean, not hold on. Not disgruntled. Kiss gruntled.
Kiss oh, something. God.
Yeah,
what is wrong with him?
Yeah. Anyway.
And he just keeps on. I mean, I just saw something else again. I'm like, dude, shut up. You just make yourself look stupid.
Yeah. Why don't we stop? Why don't we invite everybody who ever did anything with her Kiss needs to be at that last show? You know.
Well, you know what? He may have some validity to his comments. I mean, absolutely, there may be some. he may have been told something. There may be validity. He maybe got paid $1,500 to play on Alive 2. There may be, but
$1,500.
Well, that's what it's. That's what I read that the other day, that he said that he got paid $1,500. Yeah.
Wow. But,
okay, $1,500 in 1977 or 78, right?
Right.
It's not $1,500 today. Right. And he didn't play on the whole record. He played on the fill part on the fourth side.
Sure.
And you know, so dude, really, let's. And you're not a member. You're never going to be a member. It's never going to happen.
You know, talking about he got paid $1,500 to do those sessions in 1977. You know, and he's bitching about that now. That's kind of like Vinnie Vincent bitching about now. And I've argued with people about this, and I will argue again. He was making $500 a week in 1983. $500 a week. You know, my dad was working in the oil fields, pulling in $500 every 2 weeks. So, you know, I mean, in 1983, $500 a week seems to me like a pretty good salary.
Yeah, you know. I mean, it's nothing to sneeze about, that's for sure. People keep forgetting about that, you know.
In 1983 or 85, actually, well, between 83 and 85.
Birds, bro. I know what you were doing.
But whenever I played music out, I made $100 a night. Per person, you made $100 a night.
What do you make today?
I just got out of a band, and guess what? We made $100 a night.
There you go. You were overpaid.
That is a whole different thing.
Yeah.
You know, he was he was hired to be in a band. This is your salary. I mean, $500 a week in 1983 was good fucking money. $1,500 to play on four songs is good fucking money.
Yeah, I mean, he just needs to get over. I mean, he mentioned that he goes, you know, he got $1,500. Then at one point he said he got $3,000 because he got double rate from the union scale for doing it and this and that. But anyways, the whole thing is, look, he agreed to it. He agreed to do it. He said they were all best buddies, so it was not about the money, which he said 100,000 times, along with Grammy award-winning producer a million times in there. But the
thing is he didn't win the Grammy.
Here's the funniest thing as ever. It's like when we're
let him finish. Let Mark finish.
I was just gonna say, like, I think that there's other things that are bothering him about this, because I mean, you know, if we follow the story of Kiss, you know, Anton Figg drummed Ghost sessioned for Dynasty and for Unmasked. Now apparently, according to the books, he got $20,000 to do those records, right? But I mean, don't forget, he's doing a whole album too, not just a couple of songs and guitar solos, right? So you know what I mean? Like, you can't help but feel that this guy's being sour about things that happened in the past. But you know what? For somebody who keeps saying it's not about the money, he keeps bringing it up all the time.
Yeah, he's an insane. I mean, just, I don't know. All right, I'm done.
Well, I can assure you the three of us don't do this for the money, because if we did, we'd be buying vinyl. So let's do some vinyl acquisitions.
Let's do some vinyl acquisitions.
Album acquisitions.
Not today, it's vinyl.
Yeah.
Oh, and our friend Brian.
Go ahead. Are you going to say it?
I was just going to say, sorry, Brian, we changed the name of the segment.
You know, well, Brian Harris, he's into it now, too. So he's out there. Now he's a competitor. So now I got to get to the damn stores before he gets there. So. Damn it.
Well, now what you got to do is find out what stores he's going to and get to him before him and switch everything around.
Because he's OCD. All right.
So Bill, about what?
If you're smart, you'll find the records you want and you put the other record, other different records inside of it. So when he gets there, he'll be mad. All right. So I have three things this week that I purchased. So I went to, I want to mention 13th Floor Records in Seymour, Indiana. They're a small shop. It's been there for a very, very long time. They have a new owner. About a year ago, a guy took over because the guy that owned it originally, I think he passed away. So one of his buddies took it over. I did leave some Ages of Rock podcast cards. He asked, cool. Told me I could leave some in there. So I left him a stack about like that. So that was pretty good. That's a really cool shop. It's got a lot of different stuff in its typical record shop. Got used stuff and new stuff. So I got a couple things there. And then I left there. So there I purchased, back in the day, I was a country fan. So Restless Heart is a band, is a country band that was out for a while. Mm-hmm. Lisa and I really liked them a lot. So cool. I purchased that for $3.13, which is
Why would they go 13?
I have no idea. It's 13th floor.
Mm.
Actually, now that I say that, I think everything had 13 cents on it. Now that I think about it.
Didn't
dawn on me. Duh. And I purchased, actually, this does too. I purchased Blackberry Smoke, another Blackberry Smoke record. Oh. This is called The Southern Ground Sessions. It's an EP. It's got 6 songs on it, but a couple of them are songs. One of them is You Got Lucky, which is a remake that they did of Tom Petty's You Got Lucky. Mm-hmm. And they did this when I saw them out in Red Rocks, and it was phenomenal. But this is an all-acoustic album, and it was produced at Southern Ground Records, which is owned by Zach Brown.
Sure, in Nashville.
So, yeah, Nashville. So, I've listened to part of it. It's excellent.
Cool.
So that's what I bought there. And then there's a new record shop in Franklin, Indiana, which is about 20 miles north of us, and it's called Electric Key Records. They've been up for about a year or so. Really nice place. A lot of good, clean stuff. Records and stuff like that. They're looking to expand it, and they're having their second record store day sell coming up here at Black Friday. So they're pretty excited. Nice guy, great guy. I met him. Yeah, the guy that owns it's pretty cool. I'd like to go back there. It had some neat stuff. But on the way back from there, I didn't buy anything there. But on the way back from there, I stopped at a flea market. One of those flea market stores, antique stores. And I was in there and looking around, digging through all this stuff. I'm not a digger. I don't like to dig. I like it for it to be like organized by at least alphabetized. But yeah. I'm digging through this box and I find this in this box.
And it's mine.
It's called New England Walking Wild. And it's it says promotional copy on there. Never seen this before. And I've seen about 4,000 New England records.
And Bill calls me.
And I called my buddy Dennis, and he said, yes, I'll take it. So I have it. It was, this is from what year is this, does it say?
Probably 78, 79.
I don't know. It doesn't say on here. But Todd Rundgren wrote a couple songs on here. And, yeah, you can actually, if you want to, the fan mail, there's a P.O. box if you want to send some fan mail. Dennis.
It won't. It's an empty box.
Anyway, so that's what I bought.
Cool. Well, thank you. I owe you $4.
Yeah, whatever.
$4.13.
There you go.
Actually, this album, if you look at this, look, the back, it says, you can see the price.
Yeah.
$7.13.
It's clear. It's clear vinyl, too, right?
Oh, yeah, man. It's both of these I've gotten. The vinyl is cool as hell. So,
okay. Yeah. So, quick, I went to Trader Breakers, or not Trader Breakers. I went down to Book Broker the other day and scored some good stuff. So I got Journey Escape for $6 bucks. I mean, that thing's got, it's got every hit on it. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. Like that. Of course, every one of these are in great shape. I see these all the time at these Trader Baker places. They want 20 fucking bucks for them, and they're 15 bucks. I got this for $7, like brand new Eagles greatest hits.
Is it in good shape? So,
yeah, it's in good shape, of course.
Okay, you didn't say that. I wasn't
so sure. The whole point was somebody dumped their whole Eagles collection because I ended up getting one of these nights, which is
cool.
This is, and I got this for $6. I mean, this has got a lot of really good stuff. One of These Nights, Lion Eyes, Take It to the Limit, After the Thrill Is Gone. A lot of great tunes on that. Really super
good. That's your theme song, isn't it?
Yeah.
After the Thrills.
Yeah, no shit. And then one that I didn't think for $6, I got The Long Run.
Oh, dude, that's a good buy right there.
That's got some great songs. It is, and I forgot how great of songs they were.
Yeah.
So anyway, got that one. And then another one that I usually see, and it's always expensive, $8, Band on the Run, Paul McCartney Wings, which I had forgot completely about the song. The last song on the thing, 1985, I completely forgot about that song. And I was listening to it the other night. And I was like, oh my God, I can't remember. I can't believe I forgot about that song. So anyway, that's what I got. Got some decent material, about $31 worth. And so now I'm done for the week.
Yeah. I spent about the same on 3.
Did you bought a new one? Yeah. So anyway, that's my record buys for the week, and hopefully.
Are you into vinyl at all, Mark?
Oh yeah, I'm quite the big collector of it. I mean, I've kind of slowed down a bit now, but I've gotten quite a bit of it. I got about 800 albums in my collection.
Okay. Oh, you're a big collector then.
And a lot of it is Kiss. I've got like 170 Kiss records, like, and they're, you know, but I'm one of these crazy guys who gets, like, you know, 15 variations of Rock and Roll Over and, you know, 11 variations of Love Gun and stuff like that. Right. But I'm also a big Bowie collector too, big Genesis, Zappa. Just today, actually, I'm also a big supporter of the CD format still. I really think that the CD is being kind of tossed aside unjustly, in my opinion. I still think that it's a good format. In a lot of ways, you can do more things sonically on a CD than you can on vinyl, even though I love the vinyl format, don't get me wrong. But, you know, you can add a lot more bottom end to a CD and, you know, put on just as many songs as you, unlike a vinyl where you have to be careful with that, because the more prominent the bass and bottom end is, you have bigger groups to cut into the vinyl, right? So therefore you start running out of space, right? But, you know, today I got myself the 50th anniversary release of David Bowie's Space Oddity, Tony Visconti remix of the whole album that he just did. As of April 2019, it just came out on CD. I got it. I would have brought it here. I didn't realize you guys did this kind of a segment. Otherwise, I apologize. I would have brought it here to show. But it sounds really good. I only got about halfway through, but he did some significant, you know, changes to it. I hate when people do like remixes of records and you're kind of like, you know, squinting to hear like, what did you actually change in this? You know, like sometimes nothing. But in this, it's very noticeable. Like, you know, even songs like, you know, Space Oddity, it's like there's lots more delays on his voice. Some of the more instruments are brought out a lot more stronger in spots, like things that you missed on the originals are very, you know, prominent in these mixes. So I think it's definitely worth getting if you're into Bowie. I would highly recommend it. Now, I didn't see it on vinyl. I scoured the store scene if they have a vinyl version of this out as well, but if there is, I'll get that too. But I'm content with the CD version of it.
Cool, man. There's nothing like finding something you've been looking for or waiting on, and all of a sudden you get it, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's awesome.
Fine.
You know, it's like when you used to buy cassette tapes, Alan. You remember?
I still collect cassettes.
I'm just kidding him.
We just talked about how many
we threw away last week.
Yeah. We threw away tons of... Yeah, anyway.
I still have all my CDs, though. I got a bunch of them over there.
I got a bunch of CDs, too. I got a whole shitload downstairs. They've been in this big, tall container with little drawers, and they're all alphabetical. And they haven't seen the light of day in probably 10 years. Isn't that terrible?
Well, mine all saw the light of day because when I started that radio station early this year, I ripped every one of them to 128K again for the streaming format.
I just find that streaming is just, for me, when I'm in the garage or doing stuff like that, streaming, like I go to Spotify, I can just do that. Matter of fact, if I buy an album, the first thing I do is I'll stream it, you know, and then I'll go back upstairs and I'll listen to it, you know, later on. But I don't know, streaming is so easy.
Yeah, it's easy.
Is it the best way to listen to something? No, but it gets me... It's good background music, so
yeah.
That's what I do for.
Yeah. Anyway. It's interesting that this Blackberry Smoke album came with a free download.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. That's because your iPhone doesn't have a needle.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. Plus, I can download it on my iPhone anyway. Not sure.
I forgot about that. I still have...
I'm not sure what the purpose of that is, though.
I still have my ones from the Foo Fighters albums here. I haven't got those...
I'm supposed to be able to purchase.
I get a free high quality MP3.
Yep.
I still haven't done it yet. I got to do that.
Yeah. Speaking what's your access code?
It's
no, stop.
FUCKYOUBLOWME. Put the punch at it and see what you get.
Yeah.
Speaking of a new CD,
Marcus.
Yes.
That's a segue. That is a segue and a half.
Sometimes we have to remind ourselves. It's
we're professionals. Don't try this at home.
It's so relaxed. I'm like,
anyway. Okay, so you've got a new music project out, Mark. Tell the listeners what the project is, what your inspiration about it was. Is it a follow-up? Is this something new?
Well, the name of the outfit, which is called Project Gemini, I've been doing this since 2016, I think. I put out the first album. This is going to be my fourth album, actually, full length, that I'm putting out. And it's just me. I'm a one-man recording, mixing, mastering. Yeah, I did all the everything, all the instrumentation, all the singing. I engineered it, produced it, mixed it, mastered it. Everything is done by me. So basically, if there's anybody to blame, it's me. If there's anybody to give compliments to, it's me. So, and you know, it just to just give you a little quick start on it. The whole thing started because of the fact that, you know, I was in bands for a long while beforehand. You know, I'm not sure if you guys remember the band in the 80s, Pile Driver, the guy that had a guy with a S&M kind of mask, steel nails in his head and stuff. Anyway, he was pretty big in the 80s, and then I ended up getting asked to play guitar on his comeback in the 2000s. So I played with them and, you know, toured Europe and did a whole bunch of stuff. So it was fantastic.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was really good. We toured everywhere. We played in the United States and all over the place. It was great. I mean, but then after that, you know, I was in another band before called Reckon with One for about 10, 15 years. We did a bunch of stuff in Canada, toured around and stuff. But I just wanted to write, you know, music that I kind of liked. It was always a battle trying to get people to write or to get on board with some of the stuff that I wanted to do. And mine's like more like progressive metal stuff, right? And so when I realized that I could do this by myself, and believe me, this is the first project I ever sang lead vocals on. So it was a bit of a, you know, summoning up some courage to do it the first time around, but now I'm very much used to doing it. But the first three records I did went very well. I sold out of the vinyl, and the CDs sold very well as well. I mean, the vinyl is a pretty big thing now, especially since I try to make it like as collector as possible. I make it like limited amounts. I sign all of them and hand number them, and they're always colored vinyl, and I include posters and stuff. Like I try to, it's almost like a 70s Kiss thing where you have something extra in each album, right? But I mean, it went really well. And for this record that's coming out, hopefully I'm getting the CDs this week, but it's out on digital already on my Bandcamp page, on the Project Gemini Bandcamp page. The album is called In the Year 3073, Book 1. And it's basically a concept record, which obviously there's going to be a Book 2 to conclude it. But Book 1 right now is the first part of it. This is the first album that I actually had guest musicians on. I had a guy named Joe Bailey, who's a fantastic guy. He's like my British brother. He does the same thing. He does all his own music, sings everything, plays everything. It's just him, you know. So I got him to come and sing on my stuff, and it turned out fantastic. Everybody who's been supporting Project Gemini really loved his vocals on it, so that turned out fantastic. And I got a gentleman named David Donnelly. He's appeared on the Kiss Room a couple times. He was also, Julian interviewed him once because he did a 7-inch single that he put out not long ago of a song called Crashing Up under the band name the Venus Reaction. And he's a very, very well-known musician in England. I mean, he played bass in the first formation of Holy Holy, which was with Woody Woodmansey from David Bowie's Spiders of Mars band, you know. And so he has some connection to the Bowie camp, and he's played with Glenn Matlock quite a bit too, from Sex Pistols. So he's deep in the circle of British musicians. So he played bass on one of my songs, and he's a really good friend of mine. So I was very happy to have him on there, and it turned out excellent. And just wanted to let people know that I have a new record out and for them to check it out, because I think that this is probably my best release so far.
So are you doing drums on that? Are you, or is it record, or is it,
It's what I do is I use a program called Easy Drummer.
Right.
And basically what I love about that though is that instead of, you know, the problem that I hate about like that kind of drumming is that usually the drumming always sounds like doo 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 doo.
Sure.
Doo. It sounds so stupidly like robotic. But the great thing about these programs is that they're all done by real drummers. Like they have a John Tempesta did a pack where he did a bunch of drumming where he does a whole bunch of drum patterns. And instead of having just, you know, silly MIDI sounding drums, you actually have complete loops of him drumming on real drum kits. Right.
Sure.
So, and don't get me wrong, this takes a while, like to do like six songs on an album and to do a drumming that sounds authentic. You know, you're going through, you know, this part of the loop, this part, this, putting it together, and to make them sound like you drummed a cohesive song with you.
Right.
But it's totally worth it in the end, because nobody for the first two records even believed that that wasn't a real drummer.
I've been listening to it, and I was actually listening to it again right before we got on here a little bit ago, and I kept listening to the drums, like going, that's not, I mean, I probably know what he's doing, but I don't think that's actually a, you know, like you said, a MIDI or, you know, one of those older computer type generated, because you can hear nuances. You can hear that little bit of human input into the drum. Yeah. So, you know, that's not that kind of deal.
As someone else who's done some home recordings, I have an electric drum kit, but you know, the drum software has come so far now. Like I use Slate drums, so I can plug that in, pick out which drum kit that I want, and actually play that drum set so that it's got, you know, the velocities that I use to hit the hi-hat, and the kick sounds like, you know, somebody that's doing the kick drum. You know, so that technology really has come a long way, and sometimes it's really hard to tell if somebody programmed that or not.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that, like you said, I mean, some of the nuances that I like about it is that you can hear a lot of like the ghost noting on the snares, like when drummers do that, right? It's very audible in there, right? And I really like that, because that's what makes it, that's what gives it the human feel, right? Like, you know, every hi-hat hit isn't the same volume. You know what I mean? Some of them are harder and lighter in spots. So
that's one thing I always listen to, that, or if you got like a little, like a splash or something like that, if you listen to those and they're constantly that same sound, then, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, I see what they're doing, you know. But like I said, this has a human element to it. So I think that's really cool. And that's good for me, because I'm going to like to try to do some recording at some point like that. And that's a good deal. I do like I said, I think your stuff, even like Keepers of the Past, that's one thing that has a very rushed cat. Because I love that guitar sound that you got in that. I mean, that's extremely mid-80s kind of rush kind of sounding. Yeah. But then everything else, like you said, it has this progressive kind of metal, newer progressive metal to it.
Yeah.
No, it's something I sit through and I listen to. And it's interesting to hear something different like that. You know, it's enjoyable. You know,
great. I really, really, really glad that you enjoyed it. I mean, you know, I try to always make the stuff at least, you know, melodic on that end, because I've never was big on the whole Cookie Monster kind of singing and stuff like that. I mean, I was in a band before where, you know, a guy sang half and half where he did those kind of vocals, but then half melodic, but I was always more about that, because I was always into Rush and Yes and, you know, King Crimson, stuff like that, where they relied more on melody. And, you know, even like Crimson, as odd as their music could be, there's always a hint of melody within it, though, still, right? So that's one of the things that I've always liked and tried to put through on my own music.
Cool. I think anybody that can take the time to do their own thing and create their own, I mean, that's pretty awesome. So congratulations to you. You said this is your third record?
This is going to be the fourth full length.
Fourth record. Okay. Fourth full length. Yeah, that's pretty main. So the first one you did in 2016?
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing about one a year, one every 8 months, something like that?
Basically what I do is I first put out a CD copy of it. And then after the CDs are done, I put out a vinyl, right? Usually one kind of fuels the other, in the sense that I always do pre-orders. And my supporters, which I hate calling them fans. I find the term fan very, you know, insulting, I think, to people, to calling them fans. I called them supporters, right? And that they always seem to be very supportive in my stuff. And so when the CDs go onto sale, they usually, you know, chip in and buy some of my extras that I add, because I kind of do like my own kind of Kickstarter thing where I add handwritten lyrics that I'll add. I add bonus CDs of, like, you know, instrumental versions of the songs and stuff like that. And people always seem to chew that stuff up and buy it, right? Cool. So, you know, it helps fund the stuff. And then when I do my vinyl pre-order, people just jump on that right away. I sell the vinyl way, way, way faster than the CDs. It's incredible how quickly that goes. But right now, the CDs are coming out for this album, the fourth one. The first album was called An Ordinary Day. The second record was called A Brand New Day. They were kind of together as well. They were kind of a collective story together as well. The third album was called Man of Science, Man of Dreams. And that was kind of dedicated to my father, who had passed away. He was a big science guy. He was always in the basement tinkering with magnetics or something, you know, like that. So he was a big impact on my life from that end of it. So I dedicated that record to him and to another scientific great. His name is slipping my mind again. The gentleman in the wheelchair. Stephen Hawking.
Oh, you know, Stephen.
That's it. Yeah. So I dedicated, in the dead wax, I put rest in peace my father on one side and then rest in peace Stephen Hawking on the other side.
Cool.
Right. In
that's
the dead
pretty
wax.
Cool.
So,
that's yeah. neat.
Yeah. So, you know, I always loved that kind of stuff. When I got into vinyl, I went into it hardcore, you know, trying to learn all the dead wax information, who was mastering stuff and stuff like that. Right. So, and I really got into it hardcore. That's why I started doing my own mastering as well. And I always attend the lacquer cutting whenever they do it for my records and stuff like that. I'm always there under his nose watching him, you know. So yeah, it's a great experience. I love doing it. I mean, I'm in this mainly because I love doing it too. I mean, sure, there's an element of, you know, money in there too, but that's not what it's about for me. For me, it's, you know, I love making music. And music, I've been making music since I was 16 years old, and, you know, and I'm in my 40s now.
Mm-hmm. So do you record all that in your room there where you're at, or do you
right here?
Awesome. Yep. I tell you what, that's one thing I did when I would listen to it. It's a really good recording, and the quality wise of everything that you're doing on there is I mean, that's what's so crazy is you're making recordings in that room to what people were paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to do, you know, 30, 40 years ago. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, you know, what the Beatles did, you're doing, you know what I'm saying? It's just crazy how it's become where a kid in his room can record now and make stuff if he's got the, you know, if it's quality wise, he can make stuff that is, you know, just as good as the record companies can.
Yeah, and I mean, there's an element of, you know, knowledge that you need obviously in it as well. I mean, you know, when I was younger, I did a lot of co-oping in studios where I, you know, it was a gopher running around getting coffee. But, you know, I learned all that stuff after too, miking techniques and, you know, how to load up an analog tape machine. But, you know, later on, we got into full digital and stuff like that. So all that stuff, you know, you learn along the way. And, you know, I was one of those people, though, too. I was one of those guys who were blocking out weekends at places like, you know, like Metalworks and paying like $2,000 a weekend to, you know, and pray to God that we can get the guitars, drums and bass at least recorded for four or five songs. And then, you know, try to save up another $2,000 to go back another weekend. But, you know, it all makes sense to me because, you know, lots of people now learned how to do this stuff, you know, learned about sound, you know, audio technology, and those people who really stuck their nose into it and, you know, really learned it are now reaping the rewards of having, you know, technology that's not so expensive anymore. Like to get good studio monitors is not that expensive. To get a decent little mixing board is not that expensive, you know. And then all those things you can just add to into your collection one piece at a time and then just keep improving it and that's it. I mean, I record all my stuff, you know, 24-bit, 48K. I mean, I know a lot of people do it on a much higher bit rate, but, you know, your CD player can still only play 16-bit 44.1. So I don't understand the reason of doing 192K recordings because who's going to play that? Even your Blu-ray player is going to have a hard time reading all that information too, right?
Exactly. Yep. Well, and people go just overboard on that. And like I said, you know, we used the old, what is it, Fostex? The little four tracks and bouncing. You bounce the track back and forth. How many times were to the point where you're just like, it's like, this tape can't take no more music. You know, it's just
done. Yeah, it's all noise. All
exactly. And we've all so been through that.
So do you do any live shows? Do you play out anywhere?
Not with this band yet. I mean, I've done like hundreds of shows with the other bands I've been in. But this not yet. I mean, there's been a lot of people asking me to do it, especially I've been getting a lot of people asking to come to the UK to play. That's where a lot of my, you know, music is sold, actually. A lot of places where it's played a lot. Of all the, you know, the kind of radio shows that are out and about on the internet, like 95% of them are on the UK stations, right? Progzilla, progrock.com and stuff like that. So, but I mean, I'm thinking about it, but you know, again, it's going to be one of those things that has to be well planned and stuff like that, because, you know, I'm going to need to find at least a keyboard player, another guitar player, drummer, bass player. Some of these people I know, and a lot of people have volunteered, especially on the other end of the pond, where he said, you know, he said, if you want a bass player, count me in, which is great to know, right? And I'm sure there's a drummer over there I know that I could get as well. But again, that's going to take planning. I'd like to do it, but right now I'm very happy doing the recording end of it.
Cool.
Where can your supporters and our listeners find you on the internet?
It's a very good question, my friend. So that would be on Bandcamp, would be the best place if you want to check out the music end of it, which is just Project Gemini. Now, Project is spelled P-R-O-J-E-K-T. And Gemini is spelled G-E-M-I-N-E-Y-E, like your I, right? So it's Project Gemini all together. So Project Gemini, bandcamp.com, right? So that's all together. And then when you go there, you'll see it on there, right? You can just go to bandcamp.com and just put in the search Project Gemini. I'm the only band with that title there, so it'll come up right away. And then all my stuff is there. So not only do I have four studio albums, but I have like two EPs, a Christmas single I put out last year. And actually, in a couple of weeks, I'm putting out my first Christmas EP for this year. I'm going to be putting out a Christmas thing too. And I'm putting out a single for Record Store Day end of this month too. So I like getting on these things. I'm constantly busy. I'm always in this room doing something musically. So, but that's the best place to go. And also, if you're interested in joining, my Facebook group is very, very active, and people on there are great people. There's never been a single argument in the years that I've had this running. So they're all really cool people, all interested in prog music and stuff like that. So just go to Project Gemini. Just put the search in and it'll come up the official Project Gemini page on Facebook.
Cool.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show and telling us about your project and joining in our discussion on Motley Crue and or Motley Chew and all other good things. Y'all check us out on agesofrock.com. Hit our social media there and Stitcher Radio. And until next week, peace out. Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.